very special Koshcast today as we welcome Paul Byrne onto the pod to talk about the Canadian Premier League. And we've got more questions than Mike Flynn's interrogators. Amongst many other things, we'd love to know where teams will spring up. London, Windsor, Saskatoon, all may or may not be revealed soon. Let's get on with it. Hello and welcome to the Koshcast on underthekoshblog.com and at under_thekosh on Twitter. My name is Alex. As usual, I'm joined by Bernie.
Hello, everyone.
How are you, Bernie?
Delightful.
Very good. And Rochet, how are you?
Very well, thank you.
You need a haircut.
Or do I? I think it looks good, to be honest.
Okay, well, we'll put it to a vote later.
I don't think so, but it's okay.
Okay. Well, there we go. Vote had.
You're gonna judge my hair?
And that is the voice of Paul Byrne, the project manager of the Canadian Premier League, which is why we are delighted to talk to you today. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
And he has wonderful hair.
Yes.
Wonderful. Yeah.
All right.
Score one for Bernie.
Yep.
There you go. All right. Well, yeah, we should keep track of any
of
kind
points.
Of personal bants.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay. I don't know. Paul... Again, thank you for joining us. We've been very excited by the news of the Canadian Premier League. When we all got here, which was about 2006-7,
we all moved
here from other countries. TFC just started 2007, so that was kind of our first local thing. And this is just taking it to a whole nother level. So can you just tell us what being the project manager of the Canadian Premier League means, and then we'll get into a bit of your background.
I'm hoping at some day in the not-too-distant future the title changes.
Okay.
So there's just me right now. I'm working with a group of owners to try and get everything started, and everything means ascertaining a list of standards by which... we will have people play in our league, and that could be physical standards like stadiums and pitches and that type of thing. It could be financial standards, so how deep are this owner's pockets, and it could be other standards by which we govern ourselves. So this past 2 weeks, I've been into the minutia of corporate governance,
mm-hmm.
scintillating stuff.
It sounds it, yeah.
Quite, and also the way in which we're going to set up our organization. And these are all things that people don't really care about. And candidly, I don't really care about either, which is why it's so painful for me to go through it. But it's vitally important stuff that we have to anticipate now so that we don't end up having disputes or having miscommunications in the future. So it is a fascinating thing. You know, with Toronto FC, I was the first employee there.
Yeah.
And I like to say that I built it with the help of Maple Leaf Sports behind me.
Mm-hmm.
But in this scenario, I don't have that. It's just me. And I have the resources of some of our owners, which is a godsend. But there's no rule book.
You know,
people aren't creating new professional leagues every day. So I find myself calling on my experience in NBA and the NHL and MLS a lot. And those are great organizations, and they've made a lot of mistakes and learned from those mistakes, and I've been fortunate enough to live through that. So I think that's what I bring to the table for this group.
Okay. Well, I'd like to say that we're available to help.
Oh, yeah.
Whatever you need.
Definitely.
Yeah, we're cheap, too.
Corporate governance?
Sure. Quick question. I mean, you have an extensive background in different sports,
mm-hmm.
And TFC obviously helped build it,
mm-hmm.
as you say. But how do you rank this project of building the CPL, the Canadian Premier League, in relation to everything else?
Well, on the one hand, I'm more experienced and I'm a little bit more confident because I've enjoyed some business success on the other projects. On the other hand, it's incredibly daunting and humbling to be asked to join this project. That is, for me, this is about. I keep telling people this is not about the next 5 years or the World Cup in 2026. This is about the next 100 years,
mm-hmm.
and what we do in the next 10 years is all foundation building. It's not the way this league is in year three and year five is not what it's going to be in year 20. Mm-hmm. And so we need to take a long view and take a methodical sort of growth progression to make sure that we're doing things properly and not setting ourselves up for a fall. The high watermark for success in professional soccer in Canada is 6 years. So if we get to year seven, we will have broken the mold.
Okay. What do you mean by the high watermark exactly?
The longest that somebody else has had, any other league has survived in this mm-hmm. country.
Oh, I see. Mm-hmm. Okay.
6 years.
Okay. Was it 87 to... Was it
93?
93,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Could have been 86 to 92.
And okay. From what I read, some of the issues with that was, you know, around ownership. Mm-hmm. You know, maybe not proper vetting. Similar things will happen in the old NASL. What lessons do you think that the country has learned from that experience that you're gonna put into place?
Well, 30 years ago, it was a different country. Mm-hmm. It was a lot smaller. The demographics were very different. Although you could argue at the time the demographics should have been ripe for soccer. The post-war immigration to Canada. So you know, if you look at immigration demographics, there's a big spike after the war, mm-hmm. and it's a lot of European influence, a lot of people coming here from Europe, and so that ought to have set a foundation for a successful launch. And I think to a degree it did. What you'll find is that the fan support in the Canadian League has been pretty decent. Mm-hmm. We found that with Toronto FC as well. That's what made me so bullish about Toronto FC is when you looked at the Blizzard and the Metros and Metro Croatia and Toronto City, they had some really high points in mm-hmm. their history. I might burp from time to time.
That's okay. That's why we gave you the beer.
Yeah. Feel free. Tonight's episode brought to you by Alexander Keys.
Other beers are available.
the fan support for the game in this country, I think, has always been there. Mm-hmm. To varying degrees across the country, but it's always been there. And it's been the background things that have caused things to get out of control. It's been owners fighting with owners, so to speak. It's been owners letting their desire to win supersede their ability to sell sponsorships and broadcasts and tickets. So the leagues end up getting out of control, but the teams were pretty decent and had some real support. So that story exists across the country. We'll be in new markets, I think, that haven't seen soccer before, but we will have a strong foundation in the markets that have seen it before and have seen some success.
That's new markets, not new
market.
Yeah,
correct. just to clarify.
Although
yeah.
if they want a team, I'm sure we can talk about that.
But a bunch of people in new market just got really excited.
Yeah.
So, just on the point about demographics, I wanted to ask you, because as I said, you know, we came from other countries to Canada. We already supported European teams. Mm-hmm. Getting into TFC was kind of the first hurdle, to call it that. So it's not going to be a struggle for people like us now, but what would you say to people in that situation coming here relatively recently with support for other teams? Why should they turn their attention to the Canadian Premier League? Why is it important?
I would ask you the question, because you lived it. I'm born and raised in Canada.
Right.
I'm not adjusting from another club, so I'll turn the tables and ask you, what was it about your arrival in Canada that caused you to go, you know, in addition to my home club, I'm going to watch Toronto FC, or I'm going to give it a chance, or I'm going to use it as an opportunity to help myself get acclimated? Like, you tell me.
I can honestly say that for me, coming to Canada was a choice to where to study the university.
Where's home for you?
Nigeria.
And sorry, let's go around the table.
Yeah.
So I was actually born in Toronto, but I was raised in London, England, and then I came back for university.
Okay.
And I was born in India, but I've lived in, like, Singapore, California, and then Canada.
Rich has an international man in mystery.
I was going to say, you've got the global accent.
well, Bernie as well. I think he's got another, one more country on me.
Malaysia, Oman, Nigeria, Netherlands.
Yeah, but, I don't hear Nigeria in your voice.
I mean, you can turn it on.
I can do it.
Could you do the rest of the interview with that, please?
Just give us like 30 seconds.
You know what? We get one section for the podcast where would they call Momo of the Week? Where would they talk about, you know, stupid... Anyway. So, I can't... It's easier if you were Nigerian.
It just comes out, right? Yeah. But, you should see it when he goes home. It's like that. Yeah, amazing. Yeah. So, okay. So, finish your story.
Yeah. So, for me, it was where I was going to study. But one of the things that I decided was I needed a place where I could actually go watch live sports. Mm-hmm. That's important to me. And Toronto FC was coming, I think, was coming up at the time I made my decision.
Yeah.
So it made it easier for me because I thought, well, as a casual, I'm a fan of Man United and my local team in Nigeria, but I thought as a casual supporter, you know, this would be fun to go to a stadium with a bunch of other people and experience something that I can't do for the team that I support in Europe. So that was the attraction to Toronto. Yeah. For me. So I assume that for a lot of maybe new immigrants, university students who just want to experience, you know, Moncton or Regina or something like that, that's another attraction. So that might be what feeds into that fan support.
Do you reckon you could start putting that on your application for the country?
Well, Rashay, tell me how you ended up supporting TFC.
Well, I think the exact year that I moved here was like December of 06. And that's exactly when TFC mm-hmm. were born.
Right.
And so when I like just moved to Canada, everything was about hockey. You'd put on the score and everything would be about hockey. It'd be right. like, you know. Just because it's the default.
Yeah.
And that's what you're prepared to get exposed to when you come here. But just the fact that TFC were born and there was a lot of hoo-ha about it.
Is that a positive thing?
Great. A positive hoo-ha. Yeah. like Bernie as well, I'm also a United fan.
Let the record show, I'm reaching for the ketchup chips. These guys are pure Canadian now.
It's about as Canadian as it gets.
It's just that it was going on at the same time that I moved here, and it was very easy to kind of just start being a TFC fan. And the fans weren't too bad themselves.
Yeah. Yeah, the fans became the story. Thankfully, right?
Yeah,
in that first year.
Definitely.
It wasn't about the football, for sure.
No, that's true. But you had a major role in that. I mean, creating a fan experience is what you do, or what you did. So, I mean, how did that kind of develop?
Well, I often tell people that this best decision I made in the process of building Toronto FC, and again, I was surrounded by the best organization in the country, and I was given a ton of autonomy in order to make the decisions that we needed to make that were different for football than for hockey or basketball. Mm-hmm. And I credit the senior management at MLSE for allowing us the breadth to do that. I think that, for them, that was a very bold choice.
Right.
Because I asked for a lot of things that went counter to standard operating within MLSE. But I often say the best decision I made was to go on the Voyageurs board and to just start reading and eavesdropping and so on. And then I went to one of their meetups at the Duke of York pub right here in the annex. And, you know, there were, I don't know, a dozen people. And on the one hand, I was not impressed with the number of people at this meetup. But as soon as I sat down and I started to listen, I was kind of floored by the degree of passion and the encyclopedic knowledge that people had, and I really got the sense that if I could understand what this was about, that was causing all these disparate people from all over the city to come together, and they all supported different clubs, but they all had Canada in common, and so there was really one of those aha moments that really opened my eyes, and I started to get the sense that if I could feed this, then that these guys would become the advertisements and the salespeople for us across the city, and that was very definitely the case. And then once there was a group called U Sector that existed, and they were supporting the Lynx, and my second supporter meeting was with them, and then the Red Patch Boys sort of emerged out of nothing, out of vapor, and there were some guys at the top of that group. Mike Dubrick comes to mind. He's a guy that's still around, and he just had the energy and the passion. And it was really about listening and unleashing the supporters and understanding that, you know, if we invested our money into cheerleaders and mascots, that would be futile.
Yeah.
But if we invested our money into what do you need and making sure that, you know, every time I went to the bar, I bought rounds for everybody. You know, that was a better investment for Toronto FC than you know, trinkets and traps that you expect in the other North American sports, which are great and totally appropriate, right? Sure. I don't mean to diminish
it's just
a Raptor game, but it's just a different experience.
Yeah. Mm. No, I think Mohamed, who is sadly not able to join us today, went to a Raptors game, and he didn't have Twitter at the time, so he was live Facebooking it before Facebook Live. You know, he was updating.
Yeah.
And I distinctly remember one of his updates, which was something like, "I've been here for 12 minutes, and I've already bought a vacuum cleaner, and could have been offered a new credit card." Yeah. So it says,
"Yeah."
So yeah, definitely something to avoid in that in the soccer context.
Well, you know, everybody in the city wants an authentic football experience. But everybody in the city is from a different background.
Mm-hmm.
And authentic in England is different than authentic in Spain or authentic in Venezuela or in Nigeria. And I don't know what is authentic in Indian soccer. Is there anything authentic yet? It's all manufactured, right?
You tell me.
I don't know.
You're the Indian regime.
We've already covered Corella bomb blasters on there.
Yeah.
So. Just blasters.
Oh, they're just blasters?
Yeah, I think something unique about that league is the team names.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Very, very unique. There are some superstars. I think Freddie Ljungberg is there.
Yeah.
And I think...
superstars. Well, he's been through MLS.
An Arsenal legend, to be fair, Alex.
Yeah. I thought he was like assistant coach at Wolfsburg, but okay. I mean, maybe he's doing both.
He
could probably do both.
You probably can, yeah. The Indian League is 3 months? Not even.
Yeah.
No, it's got a season under
it. It's like summer vacation.
No, but it's short. It's really short.
Yeah.
Well, I don't know too much about the Indian League, to be fair.
So you're no longer the resident expert, because these two guys know better, more than you about
maybe about the Indian League. I guarantee you that I know more about TFC than these two guys.
I don't know. We give him that.
But anyway, my point there is, you know, that if Toronto FC tried to be all things to all people, it would fail.
Yeah.
If Toronto FC says it's okay to be yourself at a game, then there's success. And I think that was the point. If you recall, the advertising was pretty... you know, we launched that team on a very small marketing advertising budget. But one of the things that got us the most attention was the streetcar that we wrapped, and it you know, the streetcar goes through every the thought was the streetcar goes through every neighborhood in the city, and as it goes through, it was like an old luggage trunk, so it had stickers from all the different neighborhoods all over it. So there was Little Italy and Little Portugal and Chinatown and so on. And that was core to the messaging, which was all about this is the global game, and this is where you, as a citizen of the world, can come and enjoy yourself, because everybody in Toronto is from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And that's a strength. We wanted to enhance that.
So a question I had kind of related to that, and I know Roche has a point on this, is when you think about TFC, right, and replicating something similar in Moncton, in Regina, and Halifax, it seems like it would be difficult because we're talking about a metropolitan area that's diverse, brings a lot of immigrants who might be interested in the game. Mm-hmm. I mean, we went to at least I was with you guys, in the semifinal against Montreal. And to be very fair, that atmosphere equaled anything. Mm-hmm. We went to Europe last year. And so it rivaled anything, even bettered it than we saw in the stadium.
Totally.
Like, it was unbelievable. And obviously the dream is to have that type of thing in Moncton and other mm-hmm. places. But... realistically, is that something that people should be expecting to see in 5, 10, 20 years? What do you think we can really take that?
Well, I think it's up to the supporters more than it's up to the owners. Mm-hmm. The challenge to the owners is to get out of their way. The challenge to the supporters is to step up and deliver.
Mm-hmm.
So and what we've seen in some USL clubs and some smaller markets in the U.S. is that you don't need 25,000 people in the stadium. You need a concentration of people who are passionate, and they don't even need to be organized. They just need to be like-minded.
Mm-hmm.
And if you part of that like-mindedness is the desire to create that atmosphere.
You need a guy with a PA and you need a guy with a drum.
Both of those help. Yeah.
But you could get into a fist fight over whether the drum is necessary.
That's true. whenever my dad really? Sees someone with a drum, his line is always, "I'm glad I'm not sitting next to him."
But the FC fans, like the TFC fans, have been pretty good.
Oh, I mean, fantastic.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But there are other clubs in MLS that would decry the the drum. You know, I spent 2 years in Brighton. They would murder somebody over bringing a drum into the ground.
Yeah,
because they have their own culture.
They have their own culture, exactly. And so the challenge and the opportunity for all of these markets across the country is to develop their own specific style. Mm-hmm. If you've been to Portland, I'd hold Portland and Dortmund up as the two top atmospheres for a regular season game on a cold Tuesday night.
Mm-hmm. And it works because it kind of rhymes, so that helps.
What are you talking about?
Dortmund and Portland. Yeah, I'm
with you. Oh,
like enough to make it.
I'm working on a rap rhyme in the background.
I was like, what rhymes with Tuesday? What I was just wondering if you can do it on a cold Tuesday night in Portland. That's what.
Yeah, no. Can you chop wood on a cold Tuesday night in Portland?
But in both cases, the atmosphere in those stadiums are very unique and specific to that city and to that ground, and so. You know, Halifax is already starting to feel like they're starting to develop a bit of an ethos to how they're going to support. And it's about maritime life, and it's about, you know, their songs and their history and their traditions. So that's going to be cool. That's going to be a point of difference for them. And I suspect that CPL fans from across the country are going to get the fixture list every year, and they're going to circle Halifax, and they're going to book that flight first.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're going to choose their away, their traveling support. They're going to go to the places that are nearest, and they're going to go to Halifax.
Mm-hmm.
Just because I think it's going to be a big kitchen party.
I've never been to the East Coast, so that's a damn good excuse, that's for sure.
There you go.
But we actually got a question in from Brad, who's at Scotia Brad on Twitter. And
he works?
Possibly. Can you ask for an update on the situation in Halifax and the latest regarding the stadium situation?
I saw that, Brad. There's no, you can't be secret on Twitter. Paul Burns watching. There's no update. It's a unbelievably well located ground that is right next to downtown. It's called the Wanderers Grounds. It has a proper sporting history about it that is really appealing. And Halifax is a city that has shot itself in the foot, I think, and I think they would agree. In the past 20 years, there have been opportunities for stadiums to get built, mm-hmm. and lots of conversation and dialogue about how to spend our public funds and whether to put them into a stadium. And most recently, Moncton got a stadium for the Women's World Cup because Halifax chose not to participate in that tournament.
Mm-hmm.
So I think there's a bit of anxiety amongst the politicians and also amongst the fans, or I mean, the voting public in Halifax. So the guy that is heading up the ownership group there is a guy named Derek Martin, and he has presented the city with an opportunity that they can't refuse, which is, I'll build you a stadium. It'll be small. It'll be bare bones, mm-hmm. but it'll be ours. And let's see what we can do at the Wanderers grounds. And so the city would be absolutely crazy to pass that up.
Mm-hmm.
It's a stadium that will be built on the park, not into the park. It can be taken down and moved if they decide that it's a failed experiment, which I guarantee you it won't be. So there's no reason for the city to block this. And I know, having met with the mayor and some of the councillors, I think there's a very strong desire to support this, and I think we'll know in the next 2 weeks or so that it has been supported by the council, and then it's just a matter of getting it done.
Mm-hmm.
And already on that ground, the city, separate from this project but complementary to this project, is redoing the pitch, redoing the lights, and roughing in the hardware and the conduits and the electrical for a scoreboard.
Mm-hmm.
So there's some bones there that it can be built upon that are really appealing. It may be the only ground in our league that has grass.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. Do you see this kind of stuff happening elsewhere in Canada as well, across the country?
It is. I see it happening because it is happening. It's just a little bit quieter, and it's a little bit, you know,
okay.
When you're dealing with cities, sometimes you've got to get all your research and your you know, you have to do a lot of lobbying behind the scenes before you can go public with a project. You don't want to put pressure on politicians until you've given them an opportunity to think through all the challenges for their constituents. So,
so are these barriers that you've had to go through in the past?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So again, Derek is a little bit ahead of the curve in Halifax, and he's got a great relationship with the city council there and the mayor. So I think he had already done a lot of that relationship building and sort of heavy lifting. And again, the ground in that particular instance is so appropriate that I don't think anybody's going to get in the way. I think it's awesome.
While we're speaking about ownership, there was an article, I think, early on in the spec, which alluded to a rumor that an English Premier League club wants to own a club in the Canadian Premier League.
Have you found out who it is?
No.
Can you tell us?
So, I mean, on the one hand, obviously people will want to know, is that true, and will that be allowed? But my broader question is, how will the league think about ownership? Will foreign ownership be welcomed? Will there be, as there is in the UK, a fit and proper persons test or something along those lines?
Well, again, as I said at the outset, that's part of the standards that we're currently talking about and trying to establish. So, yes, that exists. It's not a public document, but it's an internal document for sure. And as it pertains to foreign ownership, the exact issue of foreign ownership has not come up yet.
Right.
However, we have had discussions about ownership from foreign clubs or clubs who play in foreign leagues. And, you know, that I don't know if it's on your list of questions to ask, but that leads to the question about MLS engagement in our league. And we've tried to be very consistent in our response to this, and that is that we believe the MLS teams and we have the same core interests, which are the development of the Canadian game, mm-hmm. the development of the Canadian fans, and the development of the Canadian infrastructure. And for that reason, we believe that there's a way for us to work together and to move the game forward. However, it is not our intention or desire to be perceived or otherwise to position ourselves lower or as a development mm-hmm.
right.
league for anybody else. So we're the top tier for Canada, and we don't compare ourselves to MLS the way the Swedish league doesn't compare themselves to the Spanish league.
So there will be no TFC 3 or TFC 2 in this league?
I don't see that happening.
No.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. But there is a way for us to work together with the MLS teams if they desire it, but we just need to figure out how to do that. And for us, it's important that we just get off the ground and start to establish ourselves and stand up on our own two feet before we really start to have that conversation.
Perhaps an expansion of the Voyagers Cup maybe is a potential avenue for that?
We will work with the CSA to ensure that we are mm-hmm. in the Voyagers Cup. It only makes sense mm-hmm. for us to participate in that competition. And I think we will work with the powers that be at CONCACAF to ensure that there is a second
yes.
spot, Canadian yeah. spot. So one for the winner of our league and one for the winner of the Canadian Championship.
Mm-hmm. That would be great.
Yeah,
that would be, yeah.
Quick question. So in England, it's very easy to travel, you know, as visiting fans to other stadiums.
Mm-hmm.
But in Canada, it's quite large, you know, east to west.
It's expensive, but it's not difficult.
But
you
it is expensive. But it is very expensive.
Yes.
And so how do you foresee that being a, you know, an obstacle for fans to kind of, you know, travel to support their teams?
Well, you know what, before Montreal came into MLS, Toronto FC's nearest opponent was 7.5 hours away by car. If you say that to somebody in, name a nation, with the exception of India, name a nation that has that type of geographic challenge. The only one I can think of is there's two. There's Russia and there's
Russia,
US.
Yeah.
The Russia, there is very little traveling support. It's just not part of the culture because of the dynamics.
Probably too dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, maybe. But if I was there, I would blame it on the geography.
Sure. Yeah.
Wouldn't want to make up that I was scared.
You could say Brazil to some extent.
Oh, true.
Sure, but Brazil has something that I hope that we have, and again, I'm talking about on a 20 or 30 year horizon. Brazil has major centers with multiple teams. And so within those major centers, you can you can go and travel to six or seven away games within a, you know, 3 or 4 hour driving time. There are some teams that, you know, what's that city on the Amazon?
Oh yeah,
that you can only get to by boat.
Well, they built the stadium and it's basically sinking into the.
Yeah,
it's not Manaus, is it?
Yeah,
Manaus, that's the one.
Yeah, so they don't have they don't have traveling support coming to them, and rightfully so. You know, it's a stupid place to build a city.
Exotic,
but so you know, so places like Halifax will be on the one. You know, I just finished saying that I think everybody's going to travel to Halifax, and I really believe that because I think it's, you know, part of why you support the game is not about the game; it's about the lifestyle and the
experience.
And the banter and the experience, right? Yeah. And that's Halifax ticks all of those boxes. But there will be an opportunity for somebody in Edmonton. You know, if there's a team in Edmonton, they'll be able to go to Calgary, they'll be able to go to Regina and Saskatoon. Mm-hmm. And if they're really adventurous, they'll go over the mountains. You know, and so there will be some opportunities, but they will be constrained just as they are in other nations.
So you don't foresee perhaps having a deal with like an airline and the league, you know, visiting fans get, you know, some percentage off their tickets if they travel in a group, things like that.
Last time you bought a ticket, did you look at the price of that ticket? You have a $500 ticket, $460 is taxes and landing fees and fuel. So if they give you 50% off the extra $40, you're still not saving anything.
But with a group discount, you do get some relief.
Some.
Yes.
Some.
But some. Yeah, my point here is that there won't be a lot.
Okay.
Group discounts won't be able to outdo Expedia or, you know, those other places. I think the opportunity, you know, we'll try with an airline provider. I just don't want to set anybody's expectation that.
Oh, yeah, of course. You know,
because those first five items on your airline bill are hard numbers that aren't changing, right? Fuel costs and all that. So I think it's a miracle that the airlines even operate in this country because you know their margins are so very, very thin, which is why you get into overcrowding or overbooking and all that stuff.
Which is possibly why Air Canada has no competition at the moment.
Well, they have WestJet and they have Porter, but who would be crazy enough to get into that business?
Well, that's kind of the problem.
Yeah. Planes only cost a couple of billion.
To follow up on questions as to where clubs will be, Rob Ditter, at Rob Ditter on Twitter.
He's being funny. He's actually the owner of the Mississauga team. He doesn't actually know it yet.
Wow.
He's the biggest cheerleader.
Yeah.
So he's gonna own a team there.
So you,
well
you
done, Rob.
You've seen this question then already.
Yes. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. He also seems to have a direct line to the mayor, which is pretty cool.
That is pretty cool.
Yeah.
We need this guy amongst us.
Yeah. Well, I mean, he walks amongst us. So I would love to be in Mississauga. That's exactly what I'm talking about. On that 20-year horizon, I think a place like Toronto could have a Scarborough team and an East York team and a York Region team and Brampton and Mississauga and Kitchener-Waterloo and Hamilton and Niagara.
Wouldn't that
be awesome? Right?
That'd be great.
Yeah.
It would be incredible and it would create the atmosphere for you. You wouldn't need to put much effort in with local rivalries like that.
People don't know what a local rivalry is in this country, right?
Mm-hmm.
Guys like you who have seen it in other scenarios would be pining for it.
Right.
But I guarantee you, if you walk around the TFC crowd, 50% of those people are from somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
That's the demographics of our city.
Right.
50% of the people are from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they all are pining for it as well. And that's what makes me believe that this league will be successful in this country. It'll have varying degrees of success in different cities. Back to Halifax for a second. Bernie, you mentioned, you know, this was part of your decision-making process when you were deciding, where am I going to go to school?
Yeah.
In Halifax, that is a city that is incredibly self-aware. It blew me away. When I spoke to fans, soccer people, community leaders, politicians, business people, all across the board, they can repeat to you the importance of immigration to their economy,
mm-hmm.
their desire to be a welcoming place for immigrants, their desire to, they can quote for you the retention numbers of immigrants. Huh. So they not only know, this is just man on the street, mm-hmm. they not only know how many immigrants come to the community every year, but they proudly will tell you that their retention rates for immigration are higher than anybody else in the Maritimes. Mm-hmm. And that's a point of pride for them. Mm-hmm. And this stadium completely plays into that.
Right.
They have a brand new library that is, you know, it's a beautiful, new, modern, you know, architecturally lovely building. Mm-hmm. And that's a point of pride in the city. The mayor has said he wants to have a stadium in the city and he wants to have a performing arts center in the city. Mm-hmm. And these are for reasons of being a place that people want to come to and people want to stay. Mm-hmm. And raise their families and so on.
Right. So there's a reason for further investment in,
absolutely.
You know, for potential ownership and all those types of things.
Yep.
Do you moonlight for the Halifax Tourism Board? Because like I'm nearly ready to move there. After that,
I kind of do. No, it's only because I can speak more freely about them because they're ahead of the curve.
I'm kidding. No, it sounds wonderful.
But that tells you that. I think there's some skepticism amongst Toronto fans that this will work across the country because the other cities across the country are less cosmopolitan than we are.
Mm-hmm.
And yes, this is a very cosmopolitan city, and you walk down the street and you see people from every nation on the planet, and you hear all kinds of languages on the street. That same thing exists mm-hmm. in the major cities across this country, maybe to a lesser degree, but certainly to a surprising degree.
Mm-hmm.
It's amazing. This country has completely changed. You know, I'm 50, and I grew up in this country, and in the last 20 years, you know, the 10 years before TFC and the 10 years during TFC, the country is the face of the country has completely changed.
Mm-hmm. So, Ottawa, is there interest from you guys and from them to join the CPL?
The city?
Well, because Ottawa, I read that Edmonton and Ottawa, because they're right now in
the NASL
teams.
Yeah.
So that there was
Ottawa is in the United Soccer League.
Yeah,
and in them Edmonton's coming over. We are very interested in welcoming them into our league,
mm-hmm.
But obviously we are just the second beer has arrived. Watch for it to get colorful. They are they will be welcome into the league, but they have their own, they have to come to that conclusion on their own.
Right.
So that's a better question for someone from the Fury.
Okay. We'll ask Bruce Grobbelaar.
Yeah, we'll ask him how it's going over there.
He responds to 1 in 10 emails.
So yeah. But we had a great interview with him. It was a very, very colorful interview. As well.
It was a while back. It was 2015.
Yeah.
Be nice to have him back.
Yeah. He's great when there's a good-looking waitress around. I do have another question.
Are you keeping that in, or
what?
Yeah,
I think
okay.
So. His wife doesn't listen, right? It's all good.
For the record, we're in Alexander's apartment, and the waitress is not cute
because the waitress is Alexander. foreign players. So obviously, one of the tenets of this is to develop Canadian football players.
Mm-hmm.
Obviously, like you said, not just for the World Cup 2026, but for the future.
Mm-hmm.
Do you believe that the league should do that, will do that, have a cap on the number of foreign players in order to
absolutely
develop the Canadian player?
Yeah. And that's exactly how we phrase it. Thank you for phrasing it that way. Some people have been asking, will you have a minimum quota on Canadians? And that's not the way we want to look at it.
Mm.
This is a league that is about Canadians, it's by Canadians, for Canadians. We will have some foreign players or import players, but there will be a cap on that.
Sounds
and
like then, Donald Trump.
We want him to stay.
Yeah,
I was going to say, you want me to come over to stay? Wow.
I just thought, bad. I'm sorry. But no, I see your point. Okay. It makes a lot of sense to me.
It is one way to get around the EU passport headache for players who are, you know, taking soccer very seriously in Canada, and they, you know, feel that they have to go over to clubs in Europe and play to further their development. But the EU passport kind of restricts them, so this could be good for them.
Sure, but if you are... You know, if you're looking at Canucks Abroad, as an example, which is a pretty accurate picture of where Canadians are playing across the planet,
mm-hmm.
it's not just Europe. They're all over the place. And, you know, the pathway for success for a Canadian player today is you play in your local club as long as you can, and then you figure out what passport you have access to by way of your parents or your grandparents, and then you go get that passport, and then you go on trial in that country. It's not really a recipe for success, but there just aren't any places for these kids to land, mm-hmm. with the exception of the MLS academies, mm-hmm. and that's a very limited, you know, limited pool.
Yeah.
And then the players that are in those pools are, you know, dying for first team minutes, but those teams are playing under circumstances that sometimes don't allow those opportunities for first team minutes. So, you know, we're not going to change the world overnight. We're going to start with six or seven teams, and let's say we have a, I don't know what our import numbers are going to be, but let's say we have a maximum of 10. That means we're going to have 15 Canadians, probably, on a roster, on a team of 25. Mm-hmm. So 15 times 6, that's 90 positions. That's 90 opportunities. That we're not changing the world. We're just creating 90 opportunities. Over time, I think that 10, if it is 10, will get reduced to 8 or will get reduced to 5. And that will mean more opportunities. And then we'll have also more teams in the league by mm-hmm. then. So we'll go from 6 or 7 to 9 or 10 and 11 and 12 teams. So this is a process. But, you know, 10 years from now, I think we will be able to look back and say we've had a positive impact on the generation that has just come through, mm-hmm. and their ability to play at a high level, and their ability to play at a high level in Canada and put themselves in the shop window and then move on to other leagues across the world.
Well, I mean, you say 90, you know, it doesn't sound like a lot necessarily in the grand scheme of things, but if you think about someone like Raheem Edwards, who we've seen break through for TFC this year, and all it took was a few games in the first team for him to pretty much make himself indispensable.
Into Rashid's favorite player.
He's great.
And become Rashid's favorite player. Yeah. And so if you think about 90 more opportunities for players to develop and to get proper minutes, and then you think about the impact that could have on the Canadian national team.
Yeah.
It's huge.
Yeah, but I think the best players, you know, I'm not under any illusions that the Canadian national team is all going to live within the CPL.
Of course.
I think they might for a period of time, but I think if we do this properly, then it will be a launching pad for those players. And they'll still be coming back from other leagues. Some of them will be within our league. But we are just a, you know, when it comes to the national team, we are just a piece of the puzzle. Mm-hmm. But we're a significant piece that has been missing for a long time.
Those
kids that didn't have multiple passports, right? Who go through their club and now they can't go play anywhere. You know, if they see that on the horizon when they're 14 or 15, and they go, "Well, okay, I'll just go play hockey, right? Because I'm a good athlete and I want to be in sports." Because there is no place. It's crazy today for a Canadian 12 or 13 year old to envision themselves playing pro soccer unless they have that other passport.
To your point, and one of the things that I know Rashid had to do when we did our immigration test, well, citizenship test, they actually ask you the question, what's the most played sport amongst youth in Canada? And it's actually soccer.
Absolutely.
I actually, at first...
That's part of the citizenship?
Is that a question?
It is a question on the citizenship test.
Wow.
I shit you not. It is on that thing. And I thought that was amazing, because I thought it would be hockey, automatically.
Well, I got a variant of that question. It was, what is a summer sport and what is a winter sport?
Yeah.
Lacrosse
and hockey.
Yeah.
But the whole country amongst, I think it's under 18 or something like that.
It's the highest participation.
But yeah.
You know what's number two?
Lacrosse?
Golf.
No.
Yeah.
Really? No way.
Yeah.
How? You only have 3 months of summer.
I don't know, man.
Who plays golf?
Because adults play. No, this is just
a distant second.
Yeah, surely. Demographics.
Yeah, it must be a really distant second.
No, because hockey is back up. I think registered soccer players, and so this is registered within the CSA, mm-hmm. is over 800,000. Mm-hmm. But people who play soccer is over 2.5 million.
Mm-hmm.
Right, so there's play soccer regularly. Mm-hmm. So there's a whole bunch of people who are not falling into the CSA systems.
Mm-hmm.
And hockey, yeah, that the their version of the 800,000 number is like 670. So golf is somewhere in there. I don't know where.
Do you golf?
No. Well, I have held a golf.
You're a business executive that doesn't golf.
Yes.
All right, there had to be one, I guess.
Yeah. Just bringing it back to the Canadian Premier League for a second. We can talk about golf later.
The Canadian golf.
You know what? Fuck you.
there, I got it in.
That's good. We encourage that.
Okay.
But just going back to the CPL, do you, I mean, you did say there would be a cap on foreign players, you know, maybe 10%, you know, that number's not finalized. But initially, when TFC came about, there was a big deal about superstars playing for TFC. You know, former players from Europe like Laurent Robert were amongst like the first couple of TFC batch players. So do you see any, like, you know, older players from Europe coming over into the CPL instead of the MLS?
Gosh, that is a question to ask one of the managers who ends up being a manager in this league. We will have a salary cap. You know, again, back to those standards and rules that we're making up. We need to make sure that we keep expenses under control. The lack of expense controls is why those other leagues failed. So, and I suspect we will start modestly. So I'm not sure there will be room for that.
Okay.
But you never know, right? Sometimes you'll find a player who is looking, you know, is settling down and is seeing himself at the end of his career and wants to set himself up for the next phase of his life. And there's loads of ex-footballers who have made a good life in Canada and the U.S. because, you know, so it's a lifestyle choice. Mm-hmm. So I think the fact that Canada is a pretty awesome place and it has a lot to offer, compared to a lot of great footballing nations that don't have a lot to offer, but they have great football. So there's every opportunity for that to happen. It's not a core strategy.
Yeah. I think we can definitely get Rowan Ricketts back somewhere.
I think he'd do it. Actually, that would be awesome if he played at least a game in our league.
I could see
that. He'd be like our Gordie Howe.
that, so when we interviewed Diane Dicchio, he said a similar thing in that he came to Toronto. He actually was supposed to move to Chicago and that didn't work out. But when he came to Toronto, he was pleasantly surprised that, you know, the quality of living, his kids love it, his family loves it here. So he stayed here and become a part of the city because, you know, like you said, Canada has beautiful places to live.
Pretty much. He was on the fence in the 22nd minute, but by the 23rd
minute. It's like, once the chair started hitting
me, I knew this was the place to be.
It was love at first chair. on that note, has there been interest, at least, I know it's early on, but from maybe former Canadian, can we call them legends? You know, who have expressed interest in the league and maybe want to support in some way.
Owen Hargreaves.
We interviewed Paul Stalteri. I'm thinking of people like...
they're just name-dropping all over the place.
We interviewed some cool people.
I agree.
But we didn't interview... Thomas Rzynski? He's Canadian.
Rzynski, yeah.
We didn't interview him, but like people like that. I'm hoping that there's...
So hang on, you're dropping names because you've interviewed them, but then you continue to go beyond the "we've interviewed him" list.
Well, I'm going beyond the list hoping that they would listen, and hoping that they would get interest in the league.
What's the question?
Has there been interest from former Canadian national team players?
I think you'd be hard-pressed to find a former national team, former or existing national team player who doesn't think this is awesome.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
All of those guys had to dramatically upset their lives in order to follow their dreams. They are exceptional people because they endured that, right? The people you don't hear about are the ones that go over and give it a try, but they're 17 years old and they get homesick, you know, because homesickness is a real thing, and they just decide to pack it up and come back home. And you don't hear about the ones who go over there and fail, right? You only hear about the ones that had a pretty good success story. So that's the long answer. The short answer is absolutely. They all love it. And I think we'll find a number of them existing in our league right at day one, either in management roles or coaching roles or ownership roles. But what's more interesting to me is in 10 years when we're having our annual league meetings at our final somewhere, I want to be able to look around that meeting and see all kinds of players who played for Canada or played in our league. You know, we're creating an industry, and it's all parts of the industry. So it's officials, it's administrators, it's media relations people, right? It's all of that. It's what Anthony Totara goes off on his rants about, but he's absolutely right. You know, that this is this is an amazing thing for this country. And by the time we get to 10 years, and we will get to 10 years, then there will be no looking back. I think then you'll see the hockey stick of growth.
It was that on purpose?
Yeah.
Well done.
Yeah.
Another question I have is, when you get to 10 years, because we know you're going to do that, do you think at that point it creates pressure on Toronto FC? Because then they would, them and Vancouver, Montreal, become isolated from the rest of the other. Do you think that there's more pressure on them at that point?
I think one of our core properties of this will be that we need to maintain a modesty to this league. Mm-hmm. In order to be sustainable and in order to be able to achieve the growth that we aspire to, we need to be viable in markets that are quite small, which means that, you know, you've got to have a small ground and you've got to be able to be sustainable with, I don't know, 8 to 12,000 seats, mm-hmm. something like that.
What's the smallest kind of market we're talking about?
Right now I'd say Halifax.
Okay.
Yeah. So Halifax, I think, is about 300,000 people.
Yeah.
But, you know, if you Google metropolitan areas, you'll see that there's a big drop-off. There's a handful over a million people, and then there's a drop-off down to 500,000, and then there's a massive drop-off, and there's you know, 30 communities of 200,000.
Mm-hmm.
That's our sweet spot.
Mm-hmm.
So the good news is, if you can survive with a catchment area of 200,000 people, then you can have 10 teams in Toronto,
mm-hmm.
in theory.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Okay. I can't remember the question, but I hope I answered
it. That's all right. Something that you may not want to answer, so you don't have to, but there will, if there isn't already, there will come a time where people will ask, why is there not a WCPL? Is that something that's on the table?
It's definitely on the table.
Nice.
Yeah. Women's pro sports leagues in North America, nobody's figured it out yet.
Yeah.
But men's pro soccer in Canada, nobody's figured that out yet either. And we believe we have. And if we can figure that out and get it standing on its own two feet, then I think that'll be the very next project. And it's not a matter of the women's game being a distant second. It's like 1 and 1A.
Right.
But we can't do both at the same time.
No.
And the women's program in Canada is in pretty good health. I think they're fourth in the world, and they're making noise about being number one.
They're mm-hmm. great,
and they are great, and the CSA has done a really interesting partnership with the U.S. Soccer Federation and how they pay for their players to play in the NWSL. So, at least for the very top tier of the women's game, there isn't a void, but there is a void right below it, mm-hmm. right? The same way there is for the Canadian men,
right?
So there is an opportunity for us to fill it, but we got to get the men's game up and running and figured out first.
Mm-hmm. Fair enough. One of the pieces of the puzzle there will be ticket prices.
What? They will have a price.
They certainly will. They usually do. Yeah. Does the league have a position on that, or will that be left to the clubs to deal with autonomously?
I don't know a diplomatic way to answer it. Things cost money.
Yeah.
We're, you know, our owners are taking a big risk,
of course,
to put this together. So they will have a cost associated with them, but it's about the balance between volume and price, right? We want our grounds to be full.
Mm-hmm.
I think we can all agree. The more people in the ground, the better the atmosphere. The better the atmosphere, the better the experience. The better the experience, the more I'm willing to pay. So it's a chicken or the egg thing. So I think the tickets need to be made to be affordable. And they need to be... more importantly, though, I think it's important that our owners understand that the game is not just the game. The game is the day. And it's more than the day. It's the whole experience. It's the sense of feeling like I have a relationship or a sense of ownership in this club. Excuse me. I keep burping.
It's all right. You warned us. So it's on.
Yeah. I'm so wasted.
We just did a good job.
So, So I don't know. We want our tickets to be very affordable. We want it to be in and around the price of a movie, but
right.
That's at the low end. But we also want, you know, if you have an average price of 20, that means you've got some 10s and 15s, but you also means you have some 25s and 30s.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's our sweet spot. I think that's where we want to be. Mm-hmm. But every market's going to be different. Every venue is going to have different offerings, different premium seat opportunities, suites. You know, if you sell 5 or 10 suites, that drives up your average ticket price. And that means you can sell more tickets at the low end, right?
Mm-hmm.
So it's all the situations are different.
Yeah. Well, you don't get fireworks at the movies. Or ties, for that matter, but, you know.
Do you want to... You don't get ties at the movie.
Someone fireworks always, after someone always wins.
Fireworks after goals.
Or draws.
what's under the Kosh's position on fireworks at games?
Only after goals for the home team.
Only in finals and semifinals against Montreal.
Because it was awesome, because there were 5 goals for TFC right there.
Did they run out of fireworks? I was there. I don't remember.
I don't remember either.
There were fireworks.
There were.
So that's a good question.
Because they won the Eastern Conference
Final. For TFC,
how many
goals do they anticipate?
How many goals do you plan for if you'll have your fireworks?
Because I've been to games where the guy with his finger on the button is a little overzealous. And the fireworks go, but the guy gets called off.
That's part of the problem with video refereeing, is if you do the firework and then it gets called offside or, you know,
so wait for the video referee, I guess.
That's a good point you bring up, Alex. Do you think video refereeing is going to be involved with the CPL? Could be a good opportunity.
Video refereeing. I think we will be good FIFA citizens. But I also think that we are interested in being a test market.
Mm-hmm.
So when they want to push the game forward, I think we would be open to that.
That as well as that goal line technology and other
things.
Okay.
Yeah.
Speaking of good FIFA citizens, which should maybe be the tagline, you know, CPL.
Good FIFA citizens.
Better FIFA citizens than the last guy.
Yes.
And then read into that what you will.
Exactly.
Are we talking about the CSL or are we talking about the Sepp Blatter era?
On the topic of FIFA citizens, and this is aside from the Canadian Premier League, the World Cup bid, or the potential World Cup bid.
No, it's a real bid.
It's a real bid.
Yeah.
So I say potential because I believe it's going to change. Some things will change. And what I think should change, I want to know what you think. There are 10 games supposed to be hosted by Canada out of, I can't remember how many.
82,
and 10 are in Canada. I think 10 are in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound right to you? Should there be more, or is that we take what we get?
I think we won. Of the 3 countries, by any measure, we got the most games.
Go on.
Pick a measure. Population?
Mm-hmm.
Quality of football infrastructure?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
GDP?
Oh, as in per in relation to what we have.
Yeah.
That we want.
Yeah.
Well, I can see that. I just thought there should be other games
square
in...
Square miles.
Mm-hmm.
We should have had more games. But by every other measure, 10 games we won.
Do you think 10 is as much as we can do?
I think Victor Montaliani did us a solid.
Because
I think the U.S. could have gone it alone.
Oh, 100%. Oh, yeah. They already did.
Yeah.
And now they have better infrastructure and stadiums.
Although they might... Seems like Qatar is...
Yeah,
under a little bit of pressure, maybe
off the table. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's great.
I'm just curious. Do you think that? I think it's after. Are there no knockout round games in Canada?
I think that's right, isn't it?
Could we not have had
at least
a semifinal, quarterfinal at BMO Field for 30? How many thousand people?
FIFA didn't go to the Montreal game, Bernie. They don't understand.
Hang on. Name me 3 venues in this country that can host a knockout round game.
Well, you can have BC Place. First off, BMO Field and the Olympic Stadium
in Montreal.
No. The Olympic Stadium's falling down.
Yeah. Do you
really? They got 60,000 people in there.
Well, they got plenty of
people. And they put some money into that thing by 2026?
Yeah, I agree with Bernie.
Can't grow grass.
Not by 2026? Oh, wait, it's the Olympic Stadium.
Unless you can arrange for the sun to be right above
it.
Can't grow grass in there.
Mm-hmm.
I think the CSA is hopeful that either Toronto or Montreal steps up with a new piece of infrastructure or a dramatically improved Olympic Stadium, which would cost more than the original price of the Olympic Stadium.
Mm-hmm.
And you guys weren't here, but the Olympic Stadium was a massive albatross for the mayors from 76. I think it wasn't paid off till 2006.
Oh, wow.
It was ridiculously long.
Like 22 years after the Olympics.
But how many, what's the capacity 40, of stadiums that hold semifinals in this particular World Cup? I don't think they're over 40,000 from what I saw.
No, I think 40,000, you may be right. I think 40,000, from what I understand, 40,000 is a group stage capacity. And then after the group stage, it sort of goes up progressively. I don't know that it's etched in stone that we don't get anything past the group stage. I do remember hearing something about, I thought maybe it is the knockout rounds, actually, now that you say it. I was thinking it was closer to the final, like, you know, two or three rounds before the final. But maybe that is the
like that round. First knockout round before the quarters.
Well, is this the one where it has like
a round of eight, or is there a round of 16?
I don't know.
There's 48. It's 48.
Yeah.
And then there are a lot of rounds in this.
Yeah.
But I'm pretty sure from what I read that
if you guys could
in the initial plan
put a position paper together on this and admit it to me,
there are no knockout rounds.
I'm willing to make a phone call.
That I know. And it would be nice if there was a quarterfinal at minimum, because that would really help the profile. And from what I've seen of the stadiums that are hosting those games, BMO Field has as much capacity as any of those stadiums. So, if you know people...
Where have you read anything about host stadiums?
ESPN, whatever.
Don't believe everything I read.
Wise words.
It's 8 years away, 9 years away. I think there's going to be new stadiums that come onto the... come into the on the horizon in the U.S. and in Mexico. So I don't think anybody can predict accurately where the games are going to be.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm sticking to my guns that 10 games in Canada was way over delivery versus what we deserve by any measure. And if there was a debate between Mexico, U.S. and Canada, Victor Montaliani did us a solid.
Yeah.
Got us 10 games.
Fair enough. Any more for any more?
I'm good. If Paul can do me a favor with more games. But.
I thought you were going to ask for tickets.
He has in advance.
I do have more questions, but they're now going back to Brighton and Hove Albion.
Sure. Let's go.
All right, let's begin.
Brighton and Hove? Both?
Both of them.
Brighton and
I'm
Hove.
Confusing you.
Because there's a Brighton Albion. There's a West Bromwich Albion.
Yeah.
And there's a Brighton and Hove Albion.
Which is our Albion expert.
Lots of Albion. Albion, by the way, means England.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. That's a good word.
Yeah.
Could you just tell us, obviously you have a very extensive background in, managing different sports franchises. You went from hockey to, soccer, and then you went over to England.
Mm-hmm.
So could you kind of just walk us through, how all that played out? To get you to England?
Just like most people who have a good job, I have a friend.
All right.
So,
can you be our friend?
Who is this friend?
So, I have the good fortune of having an Irish passport. And once I found that I was really enjoying the football, I decided that I wanted to try my luck overseas and see what I could do. And I don't know, maybe 5 or 6 years before I went to Brighton, I started building relationships with clubs over there. One of the high points of my career was when I went and visited Derby County, where I knew the chairman there. And he took me to a game, and they were playing Huddersfield. And sitting beside me in the director's box, by the way, it was -1 at Derby County when I went there, and I was just wearing a sport coat because I'm an idiot.
But you're Canadian.
But sitting exactly, and so I just had to.
Yeah.
I had to.
You couldn't let the side down.
No complaining.
You had to represent Canada.
Sitting next to me was the director of the youth academy at Huddersfield Town, which is a fellow named Sir Patrick Stewart.
Right.
So,
who the cameras could not stop panning to during the playoff final.
Yeah, during the playoff final, but he that was just like it blew my mind.
Right.
That
it was the Sir Patrick Stewart.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Professor. So why did I bring that up? I don't know. To let you know that I had other opportunities over there, but The chief exec at Brighton Hove Albion is a fellow named Paul Barber, who I got to know when he was running the Vancouver Whitecaps.
I see.
And we developed a pretty good rapport, and we sometimes were on the same side of the table when we were fighting with partners or fighting with Major League Soccer over issues, but there were also times when we were fighting with each other. There was a match at BMO Field that was canceled in the 60th minute due to lightning. It was a Canadian final. Was it a final?
I don't remember that one.
I don't remember this.
Where the match was postponed, and then we couldn't play it the next day because they had another game that they had to get to. They had to get on their flights the next morning. So we ended up playing it on Canada Day, whatever year it was, 2010, 2011. Where there was me and Chris Cummings, and they had Tater Torterson, their head coach, and Paul Barber, and we were fighting with Joe Geston, the first official, over whether we were, and of course we were taking this. Oh, I can't go out there. I'm going to get killed. Because we were down a goal.
That's an important piece of information,
that's
right?
Vital. Yeah, it was vital. And
regroup.
Yeah, so we vociferously argued to replay the game, but of course we didn't replay it the next day, and we didn't replay it from the 60th minute. We replayed it from zero.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
and Toronto SC ended up
so
winning.
It
was another one in the long list of ways that Vancouver Whitecaps have found to lose the Voyagers.
Yeah,
they do it with style almost every year.
And it's those kind of moments that like build those relationships, right? So
I just wanted to tell that story. Anytime I can take the piss out of Vancouver, I'm happy to do it.
It makes me think that if we can find some way to manufacture lightning for whenever we're a goal down or two.
Shh, we did.
Okay.
Yeah.
Right. The CN Tower.
Rochelle, anything else on Brighton Hove, or are you good?
Well, are there any like crazy
They're
stories
really
you have?
Trying to wind you up, or wind you down, I guess.
He's very excited to meet
crazy
you.
Stories at Brighton & Hove?
Yeah.
Not really. Although, well, there's one. I lived the Aaron Winter experience a second time when I was over in Brighton.
My deepest sympathies.
Aaron is a lovely man.
I don't disagree.
A giant. So you don't disagree, which
actually,
means you agree.
Is he actually tall?
He's a diminutive giant.
I'm talking mostly about the...
I was trying to see if he was taking the piss or not.
The experiment.
Yeah.
We had a Finnish manager in Brighton before Chris Hughton came in.
Sammy Hippia.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it felt like deja vu. The story arc, you know, again, he's a giant as well. He's just a wonderful, wonderful man who's absolutely genuine to his core. And it's the hardest decision the club has to make because the writing's on the wall that it's not happening, that the locker room is not respecting him or whatever. For whatever reason, it wasn't going to move forward. So, I saw that coming before anybody else because I'd lived it once already.
There you go.
Yeah,
it's crazy.
I have no idea what Sammy Hippia is doing now, but, you know.
Sure he's doing well.
I don't know what Aaron's doing. Oh, I think he's in the IX Academy.
That's right. So, things pan out.
Yeah.
Anyway, we'll leave it there. Paul, thank you so much for your time.
All right.
This was wonderful, informative, funny, and hopefully we can do it again sometime.
Funny, peculiar?
Yeah, whatever you like.
All right, thanks for having me, guys.
Yeah, of course.
Thank you for downloading the KoshCast. Get in touch at underthekoshblog@gmail.com. Follow us on Twitter at under_thekosh. And for articles, predictions, and the full experience, go to underthekoshblog.com.